January 25, 2022, it's Watt Pedro Show.
Where are you playing at home? I heard you practicing over the phone. At least I thought that was what I heard.
Yeah, well, anywhere. There's a room over the garage out there that I'm getting fixed now. I think it's going to be my practice room. You know, sometimes you build a room and it ends up you ain't still going to toilet. So I don't know. I hope I like it. But I was in the living room. Anyway, I keep a horn on the piano. And I have a horn in my bedroom. My flute's usually back there because when I go there, I'm tired. So I lay down and practice.
About how many hours a day do you play, would you say?
Not too much at this time. I find that it's only when something is trying to come through, you know, that I really practice. And then I don't know how many hours, you know, it's just all day.
On and off,
yeah. But at this time, it's nothing is coming out now. It's just kind of taken in.
Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Tuesday. Start off with John Coltrane talking to Frank Kosky, November 66, talking about Prac. Then Devin Sarno, Darkened Valley Lullaby, because of those software engineers from Estonia with their Skype invention I got with me. Devin Sarno, welcome aboard, Devin.
Hey, Mike. Good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
And we got to thank Stevie Bunnell for the connect, right?
Indeed, we do.
Yeah. When did we first meet, Devin?
Gosh, I mean, it had to have been probably the mid to late 80s, I would think.
Yeah. I know it was a long time ago, but I want to go before that. Please bring your earliest musical memory.
Well, my earliest musical memory is probably more of a sound memory, if you will. It's something I've been thinking about recently. My dad had an old, well, at the time it wasn't an old, but a Sony reel-to-reel tape deck that he used to do these sound experiments with. And, you know, I was probably, I don't know, 5 years old or something, and when I started to be aware that he was doing this stuff, and it completely fascinated me at the time for obvious reasons. You know, it was this completely, bizarre piece of machinery that he was futzing around with and creating these crazy sounds with. And it's something that it was sort of an indelible memory of mine. Finally he unearthed some of these tapes recently, and gave them to me, and I digitized them. And it was really fun to go back and listen to them again after all that time. And I ended up, making a piece out of it. You know, we kind of did a weird sort of de facto duet with it. But, you know, as I sort of thought back on it, you know, it was that was really sort of an interesting moment for my brain. You know, kind of opened up some interesting stuff. And to have been exposed to that kind of, you know, experimentation and sort of, you know, the avant-garde, if you will, at such an early age, at the time I didn't know, but as I look back on it, I definitely feel like that was kind of a pivotal thing for me.
Your pop was an experimental musician.
Well, you know,
on
the side. You know, he's an attorney. He was an attorney, and what I love about him and my mom as well, they just were open to all kinds of stuff, you know, and messing around and experimenting, and you know, he was into photography too, and you know, experimental photography, you know. So I was always kind of around that mindset and that kind of stuff. So it certainly, without a question, had an impact on me growing up.
I'm curious, what kind of records did he have? He was into making music like that.
Yeah, I mean, just the gamut, you know. And that was the other thing, is I was exposed to all kinds of music, you know. I have the only album of his that I actually appropriated was Bitches Brew, and I think because that particular record was something that I was hearing around that same time a lot in the house, like he played it a lot, and you know, the not only the music but the cover art, and there was just something so kind of mind-bending about that.
Well,
that
I mean, I will say, you know, Dave Holland, great bass man, but I really got into Michael Henderson.
Yeah, it's just
right. He's a guy met at the Apollo, right? Who wasn't from fusion or jazz or anything, right? He's an R&B guy, and he's so interesting about that music, you know. So let me ask you, the what he made music composed and played was that tape recorder. Were there other musical instruments in the house?
Not really to speak of. He played clarinet when he was younger, so you know, there was a clarinet in the house that I always used to kind of eye and was curious what the hell it was. And it was so kind of bizarre to me that it was in, you know, pieces. You had to put it together. And, you know, but other than that, not really. I mean, I had an uncle who was an opera singer. So there was, you know, between that and just, you know, constantly having music playing at the house, I certainly was as exposed to it as, you know, if there was an instrument in the house, it wouldn't particularly have made much difference. You know, I definitely was around it constantly.
Well, I'm thinking about, like, jumping on. Like, you never jumped on that clarinet. You never put it together.
I never did, you know, because it was, as a young kid, it was hard for me to figure it out.
Right, the reed, all that stuff, the mouthpiece, the reed, just trying to get a sound without any instruction would be kind of a journey. What about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
A little bit. In grammar school, I played a little bit. I mean, I don't remember. It was probably a year at most. I played the flute for some bizarre reason. I don't even know how I wound up with the flute. You know, I don't know. That particular experience didn't mean a whole lot to me, I suppose. I mean, I never really connected with that instrument. I mean, I liked it. There was a reason why I joined whatever it was, the orchestra. So I wanted to participate in making music, but that particular time in my life, it wasn't like, you know, it just wasn't there yet. You know, it was more just kind of messing around.
Well, yeah, you could kind of tell because you didn't stick with it. What was the first record you bought with your own money, Devin?
I have a feeling that it was Led Zeppelin IV.
And what was the first gig you saw?
First gig I saw, funny story. I'm pretty sure it was Ravi Shankar at the Roxy.
Okay.
In 76.
That's a pretty good gig. That's a pretty good gig.
And the reason why I wound up there is my older sister was a huge Beatles fan. And she was only 13 at the time. I don't even know how in the world she would have known that George Harrison was going to be there, but she somehow did. So she begged my parents to bring us, and they did. They were nice enough to bring us both. And sure enough, he was there, and my sister and I got his autograph. And but, yeah, I think that was technically, I guess, the first show I probably went to.
John Coltrane named his second son.
That's right.
After Mr. Shankar. And yeah. Then, like, his daughter wouldn't use his name, so, right, Nora Jones, right?
Nora Jones, yeah.
Yeah. It's trippy about that stuff. But incredible. Yeah, I think he had a lot of influence on John Coltrane, on Western music, you know? Bringing India, the idea of the ragas, and it's really important, so. That's a good thing to go to.
Yeah.
What about the stuff after school? Not graduating, but in the afternoon. The garage band, the bedroom band, the basement band. Did you do any stuff like that? Like, I know you as a bass man. When did you get on the fucking bass?
That was in high school. I'd say probably around 81, 82. You know, that's really the point in my life where everything kind of exploded, you know, with music. That's really where I started to get into stuff, and, you know, the punk and hardcore scene.
Why the bass?
Pardon me?
Why the bass?
You know,
I got a little prejudice, so I'm interested.
I think, as you should be. I think, you know, I think I was just, you know, it's fewer strings, so, you know,
yeah, but
stupidly, I thought, oh, it's going to be easier to figure out, you know, because I think I did kind of mess around with guitar before that a teeny bit. I found it a bit difficult and loved it, but was finding it difficult. And so I wanted to just sort of see, oh, maybe bass is a little bit easier for me to start with. And I just ended up loving it, you know, from the get-go.
I played a guitar with four strings. That's why I thought they were. I thought they had smaller necks. No, because the gigs were all fucking arena rock, right? So I never got close enough to really see what a bass was, that it had these big fucking strings. The first time I was until like 16 years old. and I couldn't believe it was a bass. I even lied to the dude who told me it was a bass. I said, I know that, and I fucking didn't know that. Yeah. Anyway, you gave me this thing you did with your pops, Robert?
Yes.
Okay, the Sound Study 5. Let's listen.
Thank you.
Watch for Pedro Show. That chunk of music started with Devin and Robert Sarno. Sound Study 5. So taking those old tapes and then making a duet out of it.
Father, exactly, yeah.
Invention. Beautiful. And then brand new from Sawako, Snow Light Sleep. Juan's Dover with part three of his big piece, Mobius Trip, part three. Sam Locke Ward, Bob Bucko Jr. from their latest collab, Beautiful Dreams. Northern Jaw, the brand new out of Strong Beach. Occasional Clarity. Noisuka with Real Woman Fame. Real Women, that's plural there, what? And the New Woman, which is a band name. This is one of their earlier releases. Without Teeth, You'd Be Nothing. And finally, Devin Sarno with Current and Former Thought. Okay, what was your first bass?
Rickenbacker, 4001.
Wow. A lot of money for a kid. I mean, I remember I had to work all summer to fold these LA Times to get $100 up for my first. Mine was a K, right? It looked like a Gibson EB3. Because Jack Bruce, right, he had a big influence. I had an 8-track of Cream Anthology, and he was one of the guys I could actually hear. I didn't even know what to listen for. I didn't understand that bass meant lower.
Yeah. No, I totally know what you mean.
Alto California, Baja California. Yeah, I could have related. I just didn't know. The music now is so much more accessible to younger people, anybody, right? In those days, you fucking kind of had to know someone. And if you didn't have older brothers like me, D-Boom, and even Georgie, you just stumbled onto shit. But anyway, how did you get that rig?
My parents, you know.
Oh,
again, like.
And what kind of amp?
It was like a small Ampeg, from what I remember.
Not enough to keep up with the drum. That's always the beginning bass players always make the mistake of, because you can't get over the drums if your amp is too tiny.
I know, you're 100% right.
Yeah, so almost everybody I know, they start off with like a little thing, like a guitar guy would, right? But the drummer's drawing you out and stuff. I'm not saying you got to be John Entwistle and like knock the drummer over. Pete Townes, I was reading this thing, he said it sounded like some kind of a organ. Who's that guy? Mahler? The composer?
Mahler,
like some kind of Mahler piece going through a gigantic organ or something.
Oh, man.
And, it was something else. So, do people come to your pad? You go to some buddies' pads? You guys start jamming?
Yeah, some friends from high school. We just started a band together and would do it over at the singer's house, my friend Caesar Padilla.
I'm curious.
Yeah.
What'd you do at first? Did you copy songs off records like me and Dee Boone, or did you guys start writing right away?
No, we started writing.
That's
really it was Caesar.
The movement, right? Because that was a big thing. When you went to a punk band, you didn't see a lot of covers, or if there was a cover, it'd be kind of twisted up. It wasn't like top 40 scene. Which I guess was most of the club action before punk movement, right? Copy bands. Tribute bands.
Yeah, I never really did covers. You know, when I first started, of course, I played along with some records and stuff.
Well, that's what we did. And that's because that's all we knew in our town. There was no culture about writing your own stuff. I remember Nicky Beat was a Pedro guy, and he told us there was a scene up in Hollywood where people wrote their own songs, and we couldn't fucking believe it was the punk scene.
Yeah.
We just didn't know, you know. Thank God that guy heard us trying to ruin, we were very successful in ruining Tie Your Mother Down and taking a breathing. He said, I know it sounds so stupid, like nobody we knew in Pedro. Best guy's the guy who could play, speaking of volume four, Black Dog, right? The best guitar player guy's the guy who played Black Dog the best. It's not like music can be a means of expression, you know. It was like building models or something.
Think totally.
Tanks, think hot rods, or dragsters. So, okay, so were you involved? Because here's another thing. another thing about what great about the movement, in my opinion, it destroyed band hierarchies because guitar singers used to run the whole deal. Bass and drummer, oh man. So were you involved with the composition?
Not really, just because, you know, I was still learning, you know. And our guitar player was, I mean, he knew his shit, you know. I mean, he'd obviously, like, taken lessons and was a really great guitar player. So, you know, at that time, I was fine to just sort of take the back seat and figure my shit out, you know. It really wasn't until...
So he brought in, the guitar man brought in the songs. Yeah. And the singer probably wrote exactly. The words. Yeah, okay. And, yeah, that's where D. Boone pretty open-minded, man. In fact, that's what he thought was political about the Minutemen, was putting the drums and the bass guitar up. They thought the lyrics was just thinking out loud. He thought it was like, because right, we're used to arena rock, which is, you know, because of the situation and whatever, acoustics or something. The bass was like very hard to, you know, or then drums too, you know.
Yeah.
It was all blurry ass shit. So that's why I always ask about that stuff. Now, did this band have a name?
Yeah, it was the Dashboard Saints.
And what was did the Dashboard Saints ever do a gig?
We did, yeah. We did a few.
Tell me about the first one.
I think the first one might have been for my 16th birthday party.
So in the backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Kegger. We had those in Pedro. And
believe it or not, Rollins did a spoken word set in my parents' living room right after we played.
Wow. So you opened up for him. You opened up for Hank. And how'd the gig go? Is it a success?
Yeah, I think it was okay, you know. And shortly thereafter, we had like our first kind of quote-unquote official gig at Café de Grand. And I don't know how Caesar, our singer, orchestrated that. And, you know, we weren't old enough to even be in there. So it was we sort of played our set and we booted out.
Yeah. People, this used to be like the cellar of a Chinese restaurant by the play.
Yeah, exactly.
Hollywood. Don Bowles used to do the sound, I remember, did for a minute, a couple. One time, Al Duce fell down drunk. You know, very surprising.
Yeah, man, there was some fucking amazing
stuff. G-Boom danced around him to protect him. So people would stomp his ass and shit. Yeah, it was beautiful. I'll never forget. That's my big golden Café de Grand memory, is G-Boom protecting El Duce with his dancing while he was singing and playing guitar. So he had pulled down his pants and started pissing in a cup in front of D. Boone, and he tripped, right, the pants were around his ankles, so it tripped him up. And D. Boone's still a very compassionate man.
I never had those issues in a live situation.
Yeah. Well, you worked the room, right?
Okay. Pants have stayed on so far.
What about recording? Did Dashboard Saints record?
We did, yep. We did like 4 or 5 songs.
Because I noticed you didn't send me any.
No, I didn't. I actually thought about it.
That's okay.
I stopped myself.
And what was it? Was it a quartet?
It was. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, well, what happens with the band? How many?
It just sort of fizzled out, okay. You know, as kind of young bands tend to do. And then it really wasn't until college that I got into my next band situations. There was a band called Junkyard that I stepped into. I don't know if you remember David Yu. He used to be a DJ on KXLU.
I thought Chris from the Big Boys joined Junkyard.
This is a different Junkyard.
But they made him lose weight or something. Yeah, this, I think, trying to be like a Sunset Strip band. One of them butt rock.
Right.
And there's also, of course, a birthday album, a birthday party album, right?
It's really one of my favorite albums ever.
Dead Joe and shit like that. Yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah.
Incredible album.
And, okay, David Yu at KXLU, maybe, all those cats, a lot of them were great cats, you know.
Yeah.
I remember playing my first time we'd play a Fire Hose album, we'd always debut it on that station.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I was a DJ there, too.
Oh, is that where you went to school? Okay.
Yeah.
Brother Matt also, right. You know.
Yep, exactly.
Loyal the Lions, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And incredible diversity with the shows. Like, I guess each DJ just ran their own show. There's no, like,
totally. Yeah. It was that was really the main reason why I wanted to go there, honestly, man. I love that station so much.
Beautiful. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, January 25, 2022 edition of Watt Pete Rush with special guest Devin Sardo. Hold tight for hour two. January 25, 2022. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pete Rush show.
gently over the shore. The water passes smoothly up the sand. Then recedes back into the sea.
Watch for Pedro. She'll start off the second hour with Nastasia Filipovna. Filipovna. Yeah. Ungodly Purple Watt. And then Senior Salty Balls with I Be Taking Samples from Your Mom. Boundless Relaxation. That's Sam Lockwood's, what's he called? His consciousness project. The Waves. And brand new from Plus Dog Plus, Sounds Broken by Laughter. And Waldo the Dog-Faced Boy, finally, with Convoy. I remember that song. What was the name? CW? It was a stage name, right? Country Western or something. and they were big in the 70s. But I think the same mentality that you'll say in a fake look or shitter, instant ham, was, yeah, I think the pioneer fucking bullshit, whatever, was CB radio. It's the same kind of thing where you can hide and say shit. You would never say to somebody in person. Yeah, assholes. Anyway, let's talk about something really positive, which is Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden just turned 70, people. And
he wrote
me an email saying he's been learning music and playing. And actually, he's playing hollow body now, right?
Is that right?
Yeah. I've seen pictures of him. And I know he's helping Jack Brewer out with the Jack Brewer album. But let's talk about this project here, because I'm actually on this thing you said.
We
were talking off air, people, about Joe Biza actually lived with Gary Jacoby under D. Boone's apartment when we started the Minutemen. And that's, 42 years now, right, this month. And, of course, we didn't want to bug anybody, so we didn't use amps. And this is before we had a drummer. It's just me and D. Boone coming up with the first batch of songs. And so don't want to bug people with amps, so we're playing just bass and guitar, electric, right, without amps. So, but we got to keep the beat, so we're stomping with the feet. Joe Biza, you know, we'd see him at gigs, right? The gigs were always the same 100 people.
you
kind of knew him, but you didn't know him, you know. So, and Joe Biza, very distinctive look, man. I mean, that guy's always been his own man. It's beautiful. And he thought we were up there dancing for hours. But how did you meet him?
You know, like you were just saying, I met him just from going to shows all the time, you know? Like, Saccharin was such a huge band for me. I've seen him 8 billion times, so...
Did you know about like objects? Did you know about objects?
Yeah, I did.
There's like a first version, right? And I think even Dezo's part of it. And Dezo asked me to try out, and I didn't make it. Yeah, because at first D. Boone wouldn't make a punk band. Then he would do reactionaries after I answered an ad. I jammed one time with these people, Santa Monica Boulevard. It was like 3.5 hours. It wasn't even the other part of I Want to Be Your Dog. It was just that first part, 3.5 hours. And I told D. Boone, he said, okay, I'll make a band with you. And they were nice people and stuff, but I never saw them again. But there's something about a club situation versus arena rock, right? You're actually meeting people. In fact, the dudes in the band, the way the movement was, the way I was perceiving it was almost like cats were taking turns playing for each other. It was much different than the arena rock trip.
No, dude, I mean, that's how I met all you guys, you know, is just being at these shows all the time. And, you know, it does blow my mind, you know. It's like, it was such a beautiful thing to... I don't know. It's like there was no wall between performer and
then
audience.
What we were talking about last hour, bitching radio station like KXLU that's very open-minded and playing everything, letting people play on the air and stuff. Both those things, I think, went into what makes Devin Sarno, and Watt, you know? I think that was a big part of our music thing. And in another time, another situation, probably would have been way different for us. Maybe not at all. You know, it was a really...
Oh, no, I totally believe that, too.
Okay, yeah, I mean, here's another guy, Nels Klein, right? You gave me Only Peace. And that's... See, I can't remember, because Joe Biza with you, but also Nels Klein with you. So that's my early memories, but my memory's kind of foggy, you know, but this is what I remember. Let's play Only Peace.
construct your aspirations. Money, 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 what could satisfaction even mean? And what would it look like? We are bereft of meaning anymore. I'm scrabbling endless regression, repetition, location, psychosis, calumnies, statistics, vacancies, ballistics, ballistics. Your aspirations, money, money, money. What could satisfaction even mean? What would it look like? I'm pressing on. Reaching for the stars. Reaching for the stars. Reaching for the stars. Leave them all behind. Leave them all behind. Reaching for the stars. Reaching for the stars. Leave them all behind. Leave them all behind.
Come on.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show at Chunk of Music. Started off with Only Peace from Nels Klein and Devin Sarno. Then Ben Salter with Aspiration. Electro Capra out of Italy with HOCMS. Mysterious acronym, huh? Niagara, or like my Italian bandmates say, Niagara. Of course, you know, if you saw that, didn't know native people, that was a native word. With five, or the Roman version of V, right? Which could be a U. Keep it simple. Keep it complicated. Okay. Sorrow is Nothing But Worn Out Joy from Berkey Can Ozcan. And then Devin Sarno featuring Vincent Gallo, Joseph Hammer, Nels Klein, Bob Bruno, and Mark Wheaton. Full Dynamics Frequency Spectrum is the name of the composition. Mark Wheaton, was he part of Cheetah's Comedas?
Yes, he was.
I remember those cats, maybe from Seattle or something. And then they became Joanna Wentz band or something, right?
Yep, totally.
Because Joanna Wentz, runs... our second whiskey gig was with Joanna Wentz. And that's where Georgie got me and D. Boone to shave off our heads. Bald, you know. He said he wanted us to look like burned up matchsticks, you know, because he wanted not just bald, but grease and stuff. And of course, me and D. Boone, we didn't know about it. We'd never done that shit before, so we didn't know about clippers. We used one blade Bic razor. Luckily, I was first. And our heads looked like a motocross, you know, bloody mess. And Georgie didn't do it. We get there, he got like a crew cut or something. And he's laughing at us. And there's a picture of it. Al Flipside took a picture and put it on the cover of one of the Flipsides. That's the whiskey gig with Joanna.
Oh, wow.
So tell me, first I want you to talk about Nels Klein and Joe Bison.
Yeah. Well, so Bison, you know, both of them, quite honestly, you know, Nels also I met through going to his Alligator Lounge.
New Music Monday.
Yeah, exactly. He did a Monday night series at Alligator Lounge.
Him and his brother Alex tried so hard to make a free jazz, you know, happen in SoCal. And it's happening for him in New York City, but man, here. But it worked with you. It worked with me.
Yeah, me too. I met him through going to those shows all the time, and he was nice enough to ask me to play a solo set once, and then it kind of just evolved into, you know, jamming at some point. And I would say that Joe and Nels both, these are people that, like, it blew my mind playing with both of them, because it was just like these sort of instant connections, you know, and they're both just such amazing listeners, and I learned so much from them in that respect, you know, about listening, and, you know, I just beyond grateful to have had friendships and musical relationships with both of them. Saccharine Trust, you know, I've talked about them a million times to a million different people. I mean, this band, like, just it changed my life, you know, in ways that it's hard for me to articulate. But Joe's music and Jack's words, and they mean a tremendous amount to me, you know. Same with you, Mike, quite honestly, in the Minutemen. I mean, these are two bands that, I don't know. I mean, just changed my life, really, quite pointedly, you know. And hearing, I don't mean to embarrass you by talking about you, but it you are a huge part of my evolution playing bass. You know, hearing how you position the instrument within songs was like, oh shit, like, okay, so the bass doesn't necessarily have to be this thing that's buried way in the back. Like, it could be something a lot more than that. It could be part of the melody, and it could drive a song in ways that I really wasn't aware of before hearing you. So
I remember seeing you first on bass with a P bass. I don't remember the Ricks. Yeah. When did that happen? Yeah.
Which, you know, that's the same bass I've had for decades and decades now. You know, there is something about it. It's a weird bass. It's sort of like when I bought it, the guy was telling me, like, it's sort of like a Frankenstein bass. Like, there's different parts that were sort of...
Well, that's what you could do with Fenders, right?
Yeah, but...
Thank you, Mr. Leo Fender.
Yeah, I don't know. I've picked up so many basses over the years, and there's just something about the one that I have that... I don't know. It just was sort of meant for me, and I haven't been able to replicate what I can get from that particular instrument from any other, you know, and I've tried.
I believe you, man. Instruments can be like that.
Yeah,
big time. We're at the end of the second hour, January 25, 2022. This is Watt Pedro, special guest, Devin Sarno. Hold tight for hour three. January 25, 2022. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
There we go, from Bacteria, from Copernicus, in his latest release on the Sky Music Nevermore Incorporated record label. Victim of the Sky is the album. And rumor has it Copernicus might be at the infamous Mike and Kevin bash this summer sometime. So stay tuned for that. For Copernicus, Aliens theme 2 from the concrete sounds. And uses digital delays, plays, and creates loops and loops and loops. And I guess he does some standard tape looping, standard tape looping, putting all so in, and eventually comes up with the rhythmic. Rhythm, and eventually comes up with these rhythmic patterns. Comes up with these rhythmic patterns that coincide with.
Other things happening.
It takes a while to take off. But it really does work.
Watt for Pedro show. Start off the third hour with Crib featuring Petra Hayden. Constant. Then we had Foam, Rawlings, and Stobbits doing Outside of Vic's number two. Angela Francis Wilson, Devin Sarno, Homeland. But how'd that happen, this collab?
Carla Bozulich and I played a gig together at Pearspace, which is no longer.
Yeah, I remember that bad.
And Ange was opening that night, and which I didn't realize at the time, but it was her first solo performance. And I was just totally taken with her sounds, and we struck up a friendship and ended up collaborating over time. You know, it's a really special project to me. I love the combination. She plays modular synth and I play bass, and I just have really been enjoying it. We have been doing sort of file trade pieces together,
yeah.
Which are a million times different from our live shows, which I kind of like. You know, they're very, very different. So, yeah, we've just been kind of messing around, kind of figuring out what we want to do with it.
And Petra,
mm-hmm.
Now you should tell people about Crib, because that's been going a long time, right?
Long time, yeah. So that was the what I called my, you know, the solo bass project of mine, which I don't use the Crib name anymore. But, yeah, I mean, that's people still kind of refer to it, so...
Well, speaking of Petra Hayden, I'm mixing the last part of 15 of this opera we did together. Charlie Plimel wrote the libretto, and it's a trip.
Man.
Yeah, there's just Charlie's words. I gave it to her, not telling her how to do them right, 15 parts.
Mm-hmm.
And then a bass for each of the 15 parts that those words went to.
Oh,
and then
okay.
She came up with mandolin and violin and singing, and it's incredible. She's quite a creative.
Truly.
And speaking of Carla, you gave me this, Flying Five.
Yeah.
sitting on a Buddha tree.
Walk for Pivo Show, last music for this edition. Carla Bozulich and Devin Sarno with Fly and Five. Then Elka Bong, who are going to be on guests 2 days. A tune called Collaboration. Elka Bong is Al Margolis and Walter Wright. Chester, New York and Lowell, Massachusetts. So some Northeast. And interesting stuff. Then I found the Electra sessions and demos for the Soft White Underbelly. Now, this is Boys to go with a different bass player and singer. And but Richard Meltzer was writing words for this stuff. And here's one called Buddha's Knee. Yeah. Buck Dharma on lead guitar there. D. Boone, big time influenced by Buck Dharma. And John Fogerty, his two biggest influences on guitar. Finally, Devin Sarno, Unconstant Reservoir. So tell me about this collab you did with Carla.
Yeah, Carla and I, you know, mainly have been doing live stuff. That piece I gave you was kind of like our first recorded piece, which she completely put together on her own. I had sort of given her some random bass tracks and stuff, and she put that together for a compilation that we were on. And yeah, I mean, Carla's another person that I've just known over the years and got to know better through Nels. And we've always had, I mean, she's just such an incredible human being, you know.
Did you know, Cap, what was it called? Chains with Joey, Invisible Chains.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because she's on a New Alliance record.
Right.
And I like it a lot. It's pretty experimental, trippy. You know she's a Pedro background, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Now, for the last thing we played, you used the name Devin Sarno. Now, in the old days, you would have called it Crib?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. So I see the connect. Yeah. So Crib ain't like an alter ego. It is you.
It is me, yeah.
Yeah. There's something about having a name, though. Maybe it gives it its own identity. The one good thing about using your own name is people know who to blame. That's why I do it. Like, if I'm part of a unit that's, I'm not doing all the stuff, then it'll have a name. But if I'm writing all the stuff, I put my name there. So, you know, it's not the other poor guys. SWAT doing a hand puppet, right? Yeah. Okay. That's what Georgie would say if he saw somebody picking their ass. He'd call him, "Hey, hand puppet." George, he knows how to visualize. I'll put in images with words and brand it on my brain. So, what do you got going right now?
So I got a series that I started at the top of the year called Sound Study. And I'm a type of person that tends to kind of like and need long-term projects. I like to sort of sink my teeth into stuff for a bit of time. So I tasked myself with doing a monthly release of a track. And so these are file trade collaborations with different people, just friends. And, you know, I've been reaching out to some people that I don't even know randomly to see if they'd be interested. And luckily a couple have been. And I'm going to try to see how long I can extend it out, you know.
Now, do you keep these private or people can hear this on
the
internet?
These are all on Bandcamp.
Okay, why don't you give a URL so people can check this shit out?
Yeah, so just my name, Devin Sarno.
Ah, we spell. Let me spell it, though, so people might not know. DEVIN SARNO.
Yeah.
Devin Sarno, people. Check it out at Bandcamp.com. And it's called the Sound Series?
Yeah, Sound Study.
Sound Study Series.
You know, and part of it is a little bit of a nod, too, to the Sonic Youth SYR series, which I always loved.
They were like collaborations, right?
Yeah, and they were just sort of like everything they did was experimental, but, you know, that particular series was even more so. And I liked also kind of the covers that were all kind of uniform and look, and so it's a bit of a
the difference was the color, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the blue one, the red one.
It's yeah, a little yeah. wink and a nod to that, in a way.
Okay, okay. So influential, those guys. I remember when we first saw me and D-Boom, we looked at each other, because we thought Minutemen was kind of adventurous, you know, and looking up to Paruba or something like that, right? And then we felt like Chuck Berry and shit when we saw those guys. Not wrong with Chuck Berry.
I think we all did.
That shit had like screwdrivers in his fucking guitar.
What the fuck did I just say?
And I remember them opening up their boat, and no cases for the guitar. It was just a shelf that threw them all under there. Yeah. It was a total mind blow, you know, those guys. Very, very freeing of the mind, of the Berlin Walls in my head. They just knocked a lot of that. Well, the movement did, but those guys, they had their turn at it. Okay, so this is the first installment then? You said you started at the beginning of the year?
Yeah, so I did one in late December, and then in earnest it started in January.
Okay.
And they're going to be coming one a month for as long as I can do it.
So you got them lined up, like...
Yeah.
If you're people, if you're living in the Inland Empire, and you're seeing the big train of planes going towards LAX, right? They're all...
That's me, baby.
Yeah, that's how you get the tunes, right? Little boxcars. No, but that's kind of good. Because, stuff to look forward to.
Yeah, it keeps me occupied, you know. And it's nice just to collaborate with folks.
And
you know?
You have your own website?
Yeah, just, again, just my name, devinsarno.com.
Okay, people, devinsarno.com. Check it out. You probably have links to your Bandcamp.
Yeah, it's all up there.
Yeah. Well, man, you get a bunch of these under your belt. Please come back on the show. Let's play them and talk about it and see how they – each one will probably have its own story.
Oh, they're all completely different. Yeah, no, I'd love to. I appreciate that.
Okay, absolute, absolute. Thanks so much for being on. It's quite an honor. People, it's been the January 25, 2022 edition of WAP Pedro. So keep your powder up.